Welcome to another episode of the Property Nomads podcast. And today we've got a really awesome guest. What does it feel like to lose £400,000, go bankrupt when, you know, the whole world could be, feel like the whole world could be against you? And then how do you recover from that and create multi-million pound businesses in training, education and property investing? Well, luckily for you, our guest today can explain all that because he has gone through it. So Daniel Wood of Momentum Property Education, thank you very much for taking time out today.
Thank you so much. Honored to be here.
We were chatting quite a lot off air about, you know, stories and, you know, what's happened to you in the past and how that shaped you to become the person that you are today. And we're looking forward to bringing that into this podcast itself. But before we get into the, you know, talking about that, bankruptcy and so forth, tell people a little bit more about yourself and what you're doing nowadays.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks. So yeah, I'm Daniel Wood. I started out as I had a regular job. No one in my family is an entrepreneur. No one is an investor. But I honestly hated my job. I had a horrible boss. Literally, we had people crying in the office. And, you know, it was just one of those workplaces where no one was having fun. I don't think the boss had fun either. but, you know, we've never learned another option, right? You know, the option is you get a job, you work until you're 65. Now, I guess it's 67 and it's probably going to go up more, but you work until you can't work anymore. And then you get what my uncle always said. That's when you get the golden handshake and you're finally free. And you get to go out into life. As I was sitting there as, what was I, maybe 23, 24, 25, and looking, staring down the barrel of that gun, kind of going, I got another 40 plus years of this, you know, this get up in the morning and just, oh my God, it's horrible that, you know, when the bell rings on Friday afternoon, yes, I got 2 days free. And another 40 years of that. And I just felt, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do it. And I'll tell more of the story later on, but we've been able to change the narrative. And, you know, we have a property portfolio now. We have a combination of flats. We got HMOs, we got developments, we got commercial, we got residential. And we actually even own we're even co-owners in a golf resort in the south of Wales. So we've done a little bit of everything and we've been able to build a cash flow that's allowed me to, you know, leave corporate work, you know, spend time with my family and just live that life we've looked for. Obviously, I still work a lot. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a bit of a workaholic, but I do it by choice now instead of by necessity. And that is a huge difference.
They're talking of being a workaholic. We don't normally date stamp, you know, recordings and so forth. We are recording this actually on Easter Sunday. We both said, hey, you know, it doesn't matter to us. It's nice and early on Easter Sunday, both looking outside with, you know, gorgeous sunshine and whatnot. So not normally one for date stamping, but, you know, but these are the joys you get as an entrepreneur. If you want to do a couple of hours on Easter Sunday, go ahead. If you want to do on a Monday, you know, whatever works for you. And that's a sense of freedom that, it's difficult to explain unless you have had a taste of that already, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, really. I mean, just the opportunity to be able to say, you know what, it's Thursday, I'm not working today, and take that day off. That's a freedom that you have as an entrepreneur. Obviously, sometimes you got to pay the price and then work a little bit on the Sunday. But you're your own boss. The only person you have to answer to is yourself, your clients, and you know, the business, but it's your decision what you do and how you grow. And that's what I've loved about it. And it's so fun. Is it like with Momentum Property Education, obviously that came out of the fact that we'd had a problematic journey as property investors. But the good news in that was that I had investors who were involved, and those investors kind of followed me on that journey. And as we turned our business around, you know, they started talking about it. They're like, wow, this is a pretty cool trip. So people started reaching out and going, hey, Daniel, can you teach me property investing? I'd like to learn. And originally I said, no, no, you know what? I fought this hard to be free, right? I don't want to spend time with you people anymore. Leave me alone. But, you know, I kind of knew the cliff they were running towards. I saw the trajectory they were on. And you know, when someone asks for help, it's hard to say no. So we said, yeah, obviously we're going to help. We jumped in and it turned out to be such a pleasure seeing someone build a portfolio, have them quit their job. You know, when so one of our clients, you know, often they'll send us a bottle of champagne to commemorate their last day of work. And it's just such a cool experience whenever we get one of those, like, hey, I just quit my job and you've been a big part of that. Thank you. It's so powerful and I'm so happy to do it. Which is, again, that's why we're working Easter Sunday, because I know this podcast will be heard by people all over the world. And if I can just inspire one of you people listening, you know, if I can give you one tip that helps you avoid one of the mistakes I made, if we can get you started on your property investing journey or just speed it up, that makes this episode, this hour or so of work we're going to put in, definitely worth it for me.
Definitely with you on that as well. And it's being an author, when you get feedback from your books as well, get the odd email and someone says, you know, that's really useful, thank you. Or, you know, I've just gone and done, you know, my first one, buy to let how to get started. It does what it says in the tin. You know, it's get people off their backsides and get the first one over the line. So I completely get where you're coming from. When you get that bit of feedback, you realize, oh, you know, all the hours and the, you know, the work that we've put in, you know, just to get that one comment can, you know, further validate what we're doing. So, you know, that's always nice.
That will make our day, right? That makes our day, that makes our week, that makes our month, you know, that, because that's what it's about. As you say, we put in hours and hours. I mean, we've built our educational courses. We've spent, you know, hundreds of hours on just interviewing investors to hear what was good, what was bad, what did they need, how was their journey. And then, you know, hundreds of hours more to actually put together the content and deliver it. And just hearing that it actually helped someone, because that's the thing you got to remember, is if you build a property portfolio, if you leave your job, that your life has changed forever. You have freedom. You can give back. You can spend time with your family. You can travel the world. You can work with charity. You can start impacting other people's lives. So it becomes this ripple effect that creates a ripple effect of good in the world. And that's what we're hoping to accomplish with Momentum. So I hope, I hope we continue to have that chance.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we'll come back to Momentum a bit later on. Let's flip this back to the beginning. Because it seems to me that there's two stages here. That number one was originally building up a business. Then that didn't go too well for reasons that we'll go into. And then you had to, you know, proverbially wipe the slate clean. And then you've gone on a different trajectory, still an investing trajectory, and you know, you've learned from mistakes, and you know, owning golf courses, you know, commercial, etc., as you've alluded to. Let's go back to the start then. So kind of had this moment where you realize that I don't want the next 40 years of my life to be like this. But with the first business, what was that based around? And how, I suppose a key question would be, how did you end up losing nearly £500,000?
Yeah. Well, so what happened was I didn't know where to kind of go, right? The path was staked out, but I met these two young entrepreneurs in Gothenburg. They brought me in as a consultant for when they were building their company. And I learned that they were on the management track for one of the major banks in Sweden. You know, they were tipped to be CEO of that bank one day. And they'd left everything to start this small, crappy little company. And it was like, they'd left my dream career to create this business. And so I asked them, I'm like, how could you do that? And they just looked at me and they said, well, have you read the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad? I said, well, no, I haven't. They said, well, read that book. If you still have that question, come back and talk to us. I said, all right, fair enough. And so I'm guessing most people listening to this podcast have read the book. I hadn't at the time, but I read it and I was bewitched. You know, I understood their decision. I understood this entrepreneurial passion. And he talks so much about property investing in that book. So we said, yes, we're going to start property investing. That's what we're going to do. And we looked around, because I'm from Sweden. I live in Sweden. I'm growing up in Sweden. But we looked around the market and it is incredibly regulated. the Swedish property market. So if you don't have like a ridiculous amount of money, it's very, very hard to succeed in this market. So we said, you know what? All right, we got to learn something else. And that's when we got ourselves a mentor who educated us in investing in the UK market. So we kind of did, you know, if you're looking at like the classic guide, right? We did everything right. We invested heavily in a mentor. We followed every single step he told us. The one mistake we did was he was British. Not that there's anything wrong with Brits, but we live in Sweden and he lived in the UK and he invested within, you know, a stone's throw of his office. So, you know, there were so many things that are different when you're a plane ride away and that he just couldn't teach us and he didn't know for us to look out for. And so he introduced us to some people. We set up our company and we started investing. We started buying property. And like I said, we were both feet first. We went out, we raised capital using all these, you know, the high interest, crazy ways of raising capital that I definitely don't recommend. We've identified 25 ways to fund a property deal that are all safer than the crazy, like guarantee someone 10% interest on a short-term loan. But we went all in. We pulled that money. We went out, we started buying properties. The problem was that there was a couple cultural problems we had. The first is Sweden, we're a very, very trusting market. I mean, in many places of Sweden, you don't lock your door, right? When someone says they're going to do something, they do it. When you pay for a service, that service is delivered. It could be delayed, fine, but it's going to be delivered. You don't have to follow up. We kind of went in with the same mindset. We were told differently, but we had that mindset going into the UK. Like, hey, we got a business partner here. He's going to handle the deal. We're going to handle the money. Everything's going to be fine. But it turned out that, you know, it isn't always that way. So a project that we did, we bought a couple blocks of flats with a gentleman. And it turned, you know, he's told us, you know, he'd done hundreds of deals like this. Everything was great. We didn't do our proper due diligence. If we'd looked into him closer, we would have heard that, you know, his reputation is not as a quality investor, right? But we were introduced by our mentor. We trusted our mentor. We trusted his judgment. And we felt that, well, let's do it. We got to throw ourselves in. So it turned out in this project, first off, this was the biggest project he'd ever done. Not this one of the smallest ones as he'd made it sound. So when things started cropping up, issues, he didn't really know how to deal with it, but he didn't tell us. So one thing that happened was, you know, we paid 33% to the builder up front. And then promptly the builder went bankrupt and 33,000 pounds disappeared just like that. He brought in a new builder. We spent another 33%. We hadn't learned that, you know, you got to kind of tear it out a little bit. We paid up front 33% and he disappeared off to South America with our money. We're now 67,000 pounds out of pocket and barely a nail has been knocked down into this building. Third builder comes in. Once again, we pay 33%. So now we've actually paid our entire build quote and no one started yet. Blessed though, this builder actually completed the project, but it cost 30% more than expected, meaning our build quote had essentially doubled from 100K to 200K on this project. What I later learned when we started going deeper into the bookkeeping was that during this time, our partner had been skimming money off of the book. So another about 50,000 pounds had disappeared into that. And then the valuations didn't come in the way they needed to. So, and that was just one project. We had three or four projects that went kind of a similar route with some of the same and some different partners. And the problem with property is that it is such a slow game. So you don't always realize what's happening, right? His skimming off the books, we didn't realize those losses. The different projects were tiered in different phases. So, you know, it took us a year or two before we actually realized that, wait a sec, we're actually 400,000 pounds into negative equity now. What do we do? And that's when my investors who I'd promised high interest on short-term loans started calling and saying, hey, it's time to pay me back. And I'm staring at my business going, well, I don't have any money. I'm 400,000 pounds in debt. I can't even sell the portfolio and pay you guys back. I have no idea what to do. And I was stressing out of my mind. It was horrible. And then I get this call from my accountant who says, "Hey, Daniel, it's time to bankrupt your company." And to me, that's like that, you know, that's, I know in the UK, that is a total failure. In Sweden, it's even worse. That's the end of your business career. So I'm going like, oh no. Oh, okay. All right, Michael, what does this mean? What's going to happen? He said, "Well, what we're going to do is we're going to write off that debt. I'll set you up a new company. You can start over with a clean slate." I'm like, whoa, wait, what? He said, no, we'll just write off all that debt. And that sounded amazing. I was so excited. I'm like, wait a second, I can start over. I've learned so much because we'd started doing good deals. We'd gotten through those 3-4 first deals with horrible results, but we'd learned from them. And now we were doing good deals. We'd done 3-4 good deals. They were just not enough to compensate for the massive losses in the old ones. We said, wait a sec, could we start over and then just do good deals and not have to pay that debt? That's amazing. He said, yeah, exactly. Let's go for it. I said, well, I have to ask one last question. If I don't pay this debt, who does? He said, well, I mean, your investors aren't going to see much of their money back. I said, ah, all right. So you're not telling me I should start over. You're telling me I should throw everyone else under the bus. He said, well, yeah, I guess that's another way of putting it. I said, well, look, we can't do that. We just can't do that. And so we never actually went bankrupt. We were just essentially, we were bankrupt. We just never filed for bankruptcy. And I just said, look, we cannot go bankrupt. We cannot do this. I have no idea how we're going to figure it out, but somehow we're going to figure this out. And that's where we got so lucky, because one of the things we'd started during this journey is we were learning from a lot of very exciting people around the world. And most of these people were never coming to Sweden. So we set up an event company in Sweden. And it was right around this time that we had Kim Kiyosaki, one of the authors of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, come and co-host, keynote an event with us in Sweden. And as the organizer of the event, the exciting thing is, you know, you get to hang out with the speaker, right? You get to take them out to dinner. You get to show them around the town. And so we actually got to know Kim, and I would dare to say, you know, call her a friend. And it was amazing when we started describing what had happened, how she kind of pointed out every mistake we'd made and what we could have done differently. And then she went through and like, this is how you should restructure your business. This is what you should do now. And just gave us kind of a 5-point list. Just go do this and you'll figure it out. And she jumped on some calls, kind of informal mentor kind of thing, on a couple calls with us afterwards and really helped us out. And we're actually business partners to the Rich Dad organization today. We've translated the game Cashflow 101 to Swedish and have the global rights for the Swedish version of the game. So that's been really, really cool. But it's been an incredible journey, because what we did was we went and we restructured a lot of the debt. And then we really just said, look, we've done a few deals that have gone well. Let's do more. And we went out and we've done a bit over 100 property deals. And it took most of those deals to kind of turn the ship around and figure out ways to pay back the investors. And it's been a tough slog. It's been a horrible slog, to be honest. But once we were able to start building that positive cash flow and turn things around, it takes on a momentum of its own. And that's where we were able to turn things around. So property can be tough, and it really, really comes down to having the right team, the right partners, the right people. And that's what I learned on those first 4 deals, just not good people. It was just the wrong people. And when I think back, I know that I had a gut reaction that this is not the right person to be working with. But, you know, I let myself convince myself that my gut was wrong, and we did it anyway. And look where that led us. We've become much better at, you know, Warren Buffett says that the best people in the world say no to almost everything. So what we kind of do now is when we meet someone, we'll go by that gut feeling to make sure that they are good. And then we'll do a deep due diligence into the person. And so both kind of the intelligence, the psychological, the mental side of it has to say yes. And also our gut, subconscious, emotional side needs to say yes. If one of the two say no, then there's no deal. Then we walk away. Even if it looks brilliant on paper, even if it feels great, if both sides don't come together, then we're not doing it. And that's allowed us now to, our deals do go very, very well. They go according to plan. Well, more or less, it's still property, but they, you know, there's always a solution going forward and we're always moving forward and we've been able to build a portfolio as a result. So I think that is really the key takeaway. And the fact that we never did throw in the towel, I think that's something I'm proud of, even though it would have been so much easier just to start over and go again.
I'm looking down at my notes here. I mean, there's so many different questions that have just sprung to mind, and, you know, ranging from, you know, what, you know, go into the mistakes in a bit more detail, from, you know, what would it have been like speaking to an investor at that time, and the amount of pressure that must be going through, or that must have been going through your head. Let's go back to the investors, because when I speak to people that are looking to get, you know, into property or bits and bobs, there seems to be this fear of, what if I'm not able to pay an investor back? You know, what if a revaluation doesn't go as well as possible? What if? A lot of what if scenarios, justifiably so, you know, it is what it is. In terms of when you realize that you're about £400,000 that you owe to investors, and you're starting to get these calls from investors, how did you approach those conversations with the investors?
Well, so that went through a couple of phases. One part was, as I thought I was going to be able to figure it out straight up, right? And I'm kind of going like, hey, all right, we've had some setbacks, we're delayed, I'll come back to you with more information. And I just try to kind of push things out, which wasn't the right way to do it, but that's where I was at that time. What then happened was, when I did get this real like bankruptcy feed in, what happened was I was very honest and I was very blunt with the investors. So I spoke to them and I said, look, this is the situation. My accountant thinks I should go bankrupt. What that would mean is that you'll get about 20% of your invested capital back. That's kind of what we calculated after liquidation costs and stuff, is they would get about 20% of their invested capital. And I said, look, for me, that's the best thing to do. That's what my accountant says. That's what he's recommending me to do, is do that. So that is on the table. If you want me to do that, that's what I'm going to do. What I want to do is to stop paying you interest and to slowly try to turn this business around and try to pay you back 100% of your invested capital. Now, I can't do that with you hounding me on it. I can't do that. I understand that this is not what you want to hear. I understand that you're pissed. I screwed up, but I'm going to do what I can to make things right. And kind of when people started yelling, I kind of treated them as you'd treat a kid when they start yelling. And it's not always right. And this is not maybe the best way, but I kind of said, look, if that's how you feel, I'll just bankrupt the company. These are your options. I'll bankrupt the business. You get 20%, or you're patient and you get what you can. I know you don't trust me. I don't deserve your trust, but this is where we are. Either I do my best and you get what you can, or we just go to bankruptcy court. You can drag my name through the mud and you get 20%. It's your call. And when you get to that point, you know, there's no real threat a person can give. It's like, oh, I'm going to tell people. I'm like, dude, if we go bankrupt, it's going to be an open, that's open information, right? And that's an option. And if that happens, that happens. It is what it is. I'm going to do my best to do what's right for you and do right by you and give you that. But it's not going to go overnight, because I'm £400,000 in debt. It's your call. What do you want us to do? And we had to go. I went around that circle with a lot of people. A lot of times I wasn't sleeping. I was stressed through my mind. I mean, I apologized. I groveled, all those things. But in the end, it was kind of that firm point where, look, this is the situation. And I'm going to do it. Either I go bankrupt and you and all the other investors get 20% of their capital, you all are treated evenly, or you give me the chance to try to deal with this and I'll give you as much money as I can back as quickly as I can. How much can I get? When can I get it? I have no idea. I'm £400,000 in debt. I'm going to try to figure things out, but I do not know. And, you know, that's not what anyone wants to hear, but at the same time, it was the only honest response I could give them. And it came with a lot of, you know, phones, you know, thrown in my ear, right? You know, hangups and you know, people didn't want to talk to me, but it kind of was what it was. And slowly dealing with the investors one by one, paying back debt, you do earn back a certain amount of trust. Some people, a lot of trust. Some people have gone on to refer people to our education and say, like, look, these are really good people. They do what they say they're going to do, even when they have setbacks. While other people, you know, I don't talk to them. And I'm sure they tell people, Daniel's a lousy investor. He screwed up. He lost 400,000 pounds and he, you know, he didn't hold what he promised. And in both cases, they're right. Because my, as a new investor doing my first deals, I was not a good investor. I was a really bad investor. But 100 deals later, I do believe I've learned something. And I'm a decent investor today. So it depends on which version you look at. And definitely those investors are right to look at me as that initial investor and say, look, that guy brought in me as an investor and he did not deliver. And that's their prerogative. And that's why I appreciate so much the good, the amazing people who've kind of allowed me to slowly prove my worth again and now go and say, like, hey, look, these are good people. And that's why a big part of Momentum and why I do a lot of interviews like this is we don't try to hide our failings. You know, I've made a lot of mistakes as an investor. And I see that as something we all should learn from. I learned a lot from it. I was able to grow from it. I was able to start doing good deals. Now, pretty much all of our deals go well. I mean, there are delays. I mean, with COVID, some of our developments really, you know, they delayed, but at the same time, it's not like they're going off budget or going poorly. They're moving forward steadily. So it's been an interesting journey. And I think that is what you got to bring with you as an investor. And I think that's, as you were saying there, Robert, with like the fear of not being able to pay investors back, a lot of it is how you structure the deal. I was borrowing money for 6 to 12 months on, you know, 10% per annum interest. That's the worst way of any way you can bring on capital at all. That is the absolute worst. You know, of all the options that are out there in the market, that is the worst way ever to bring on capital. And that was 100% of what I do. And I know a lot of educational companies, this is what they teach. And it's crazy because as you say, what if the valuation doesn't come in? Well, now what happens? You might even have a delay fee come in and now your interest is killing you. What if the project takes extra time? Again, that interest is killing you because it's so expensive and all these things, you know, what if expenses go up? Well, now you have to borrow more money at that insane interest because, you know, property is all about a game of momentum. It's the compound effect. If you're making a positive income every month, if your values are going up, then that compounds. And we've done a calculation that shows that if you buy one property today with a mortgage, doing 10% per annum profit on the cash flow and gaining in value on average of about 5% per year in value, that one property with refinances reinvested will actually turn into a 20 property portfolio over 20 years with no additional capital in. That's the compounding. The problem is, if things go according to plan and that return goes from 10% plus to 10% minus, that's working in the opposite effect. And you're going more and more broke over time. And that's what started happening to me. And that's why you need to structure your debt smarter. Because if you do, then you can always put yourself in the positive compounding side.
Absolutely. There's a lot. To just kind of clear my throat. I told you I'd mess up first, didn't we? Off record, I said I'd mess up first. He says, clear my throat. I'm just going to keep that in for a laugh because I think people would appreciate that. So many lessons. There's so many lessons there. And to be honest with you, Daniel, I think, you know, just having sat here and listened to what you've just said, you know, number one, it's very inspirational because you've covered a lot of people's fears, you know, there. Secondly, I'd say that, you know, myself and Aaron, we've made mistakes as well, you know, in our investing careers. Yeah, hold our hands up to that. And I love the way that you tackled that with your investors, and we've done the same. If something hasn't gone quite to plan, it's, you know, it's very easy to just beat around the bush and, you know, try and go around it. But let's be honest, when it comes down to finance, people are very most people are very sensitive with that. So you've just got to tackle it head on, you know, go for a brick wall, be honest, be blunt. This is what's going on. These are the options, et cetera, et cetera. So you completely get where you're coming from with that. And again, people listening to this, if you're in a difficult situation or you have been previously, you know, strong advice, I'm sure Dan, you'd agree with this, just be brutally honest with your investors. Don't try and lead them down a narrow path, because that could end up in, you know, all sorts of things. Be brutally honest. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone. It's property. As you've alluded to, Daniel, these things do happen. It's all part of the fun. Going on to Kim Kiyosaki very, very quickly, actually, to get some, you know, great extra nuggets for the show. You mentioned that you had a couple of informal mentorship calls, or informal chats with her, and she gave you a couple of top tips about, oh, you've done this wrong, or how to do this, how to do that. Can you pass on a couple of pieces of that information? What did she tell you?
Well, I mean, the big one was this whole 10% interest on short-term loans. When we told her that's what we were taught, she exploded. Literally, she went on a 15-minute rant around how can anyone teach this? And she was so angry to hear it. She was, you know, it was just wrong. So she said, look, there are two other ways you can structure it, because essentially that we've identified 25 different sources of capital, but the cost of the capital always kind of comes down to three ways. It's either a fixed interest, and you should not be paying 10%. That should be low, right? That we are talking 4-6% interest. That's what you should be guaranteeing someone. The second is a share of cash flow. And what you'll often do there is you might give someone a guaranteed maybe 2% interest, and then say you'll get 30% of the cash flow, which potentially can give you maybe 8-10% interest per year. But that means if something goes wrong with your project, you're only on the hook for 2%. And can you imagine that difference? 10% guaranteed and 2%, it's different worlds, right? And then the third way is to do it as a full-on joint venture. You say, look, we co-own this project. You know, you do the money, I do the deal, 50-50. And now you're not on the hook for anything. If things go wrong, that person is your partner. You're not, you don't owe them anything. But there you structure it in a way that maybe they have a potential 10 to 15% return. So that way you can go to someone and say, hey, so if I'm bringing on you here, Robert, I say, hey, Robert, I'm so excited to be working with you. It's going to be great that you want to come on as an investor. Look, I got three options for you. One is I can guarantee you 5% interest. That would be a fixed interest loan. I would do it a longer period, right? We're talking a three-year loan with me having the option to pay you back early. So I'm going to borrow that money at a low interest. Or if you want to have a cut of the upside, what we can do is I'll guarantee you 2% interest. So you're going to go away with a profit, but I'll give you 30% of the upside. I'll give you 30% of the cash flow, meaning if things go the way I expect, here's my spreadsheet, you know, I show off the numbers. If things go the way I expect, you're going to get somewhere around 9% per annum return. So that's better, but I'm not guaranteeing it. I'm guaranteeing you 2. So either you take the 5 guaranteed or you take the 9 with potential 9, but worst case 2. Or the third option, if you like this deal as much as I do, if you're as excited about it as I am, well, let's do this as a full-on joint venture. I'm not going to guarantee you your return, but I'm going to give you 50% ownership of this property, of this project. And we can do that by setting up a company together. We can do a joint venture agreement, a deed of trust. There are ways to structure that. But we'll say we'll do this together and you'll get 50% of the cash flow. You'll get 50% of the capital appreciation, 50% of future refinances, which means you should be looking at about 12 to 15% per annum returns. But I guarantee you nothing. It's the project will go the way it goes. Now it's up to you. Which one of these three would you like? And you'll see people are of different kind of risk profiles. Some people, they just want, look, I just want guaranteed. I want zero risk. You're like, all right, fine. That's 5%. Is that way you're not taking much of a risk? It's essentially a mortgage. It's a little more expensive than a regular mortgage, but compare it for them. These are low risk type people, meaning they're probably keeping their money in a savings account with 0.25% interest. You're still giving them whatever it is, 20 times their return. So they should be pretty happy. If they say, well, I would get more in the stock market, you can go, well, are you in the stock market? The person that would take a 5% would be like, no, I'm not. There's risk there. Exactly. That's why I'm guaranteeing you this. But if they say, yeah, I'm in the stock market, that's like, well, great. If you like that upside, well, let's look at the middle path. I'll give you 30% of the upside. You'll be looking at 9% per year. The stock market average is 8. So I'm beating the stock market. Let's do that. And they go, huh, all right, that makes sense. Or if they're more like, hey, Daniel, if I'm paying for this deal, I want to get paid for it. You say, well, let's do it as a joint venture. I'll do the work. I'll find the deal. I'll project manage. You know, I'll put together the teams. I'll do all that. You just pay for it. You sit there as a passive investor and you can expect a 12% per annum return. If things go according to plan, things might happen. Things might go wrong. There might be delays. But if things go according to plan, you'll get very, very well paid for it. You say, all right, I'm in. So that way you kind of give them the three options. And again, you'll find people will fall into one of the different three. And especially when you're giving people a share of the deal, if it's a share of cash flow or their partners, you got to be brutally honest. As soon as something comes up, you know, it can be something minor. Hey, the builder found out that when we removed this, you know, the plating on this wall, you know, then that we had to change the insulation. It's going to cost us another 300 pounds. It might not feel like anything. It's not worth bringing up, but they are now your business partner. So yes, you must bring it up. And by telling them these things, but also give them the good news. Like, hey, this part of the project went a week quicker. This is where we are. You know, weekly updates or at least bi-weekly updates show to them that you're a part of it, that they're a part of it, and that you're working together. That will give you that leeway when things do start to go wrong. If they start to go wrong, they will have followed along on the project. They might even have been a part of the decisions that have gone wrong. And so when something has gone wrong and they were a part of the decision, they can't go, Robert, you screwed me over. What the hell? But you decided that we were going to go with this builder. We made that decision together based on his references. Yes, but you. No, but we made this decision. All right, fair enough. I mean, it's about how you handle people and just, I mean, it's one of those things. Common sense isn't always so common. I haven't had it a lot, but that was kind of key advice from Kim, like structure it smart on that side. And really, because of the situation we were in, that's what we focused on. And she told us, go out and raise new money using that honesty. Like, hey, look, these are our first four deals. They didn't go well. These are our next four deals. They did go pretty well. We feel confident that we're going to do well now. So let's do this together. And we had to give great terms. I mean, we gave away a lot of equity, but we did not continue to go down the route of 10% fixed interest.
And as you say, it's all about learning from mistakes is key. Learning from the mistakes of others, heeding that advice. People like Kim Kiyosaki giving you advice, heed that advice, take the action on it. And the other thing that you've alluded to there, Daniel, that I quite enjoyed was you talking about the compounding effect. Now, I don't know if people listening to this have ever played around with a compound interest calculator, but my word, it is incredibly sexy. I'm not going to lie about that. It's incredibly sexy. Even if you're just doing it based on, I know it's not the best comparison, such, but even if you just do it based on plopping money into the stock market and doing it, you know, a 5%, you know, per year, and you'd reinvesting. But yeah, if you play around with a compound interest calculator, whoo, yeah, that's pretty good. And also, you know, macroeconomically, there are going to be time. Well, there's always opportunities anyway, no matter what stage of the market cycle we're in. But macroeconomically, there's always going to be times that are way more advantageous for investing in property than not so. But the key thing, you know, UK, certainly UK wise, is it probably in our lifetimes, is supply is going to be, demand's going to be higher than supply. Now, economics 101, that will push the price up. Okay, there might be blips in the road every now and then, but certainly in our lifetimes, given the way planning is, et cetera, yeah, demand's higher than supply. So basic economics are, you know, prices in due course, and with inflation and all this currency printing at the moment, again, looking at the macroeconomics over the long term, that's going to, you know, push those prices up, which, as you said, Daniel, you can, if you're reinvesting smartly and you're doing everything smartly, you know, getting one or two properties now, you know, could yield 20 or so, as you've pointed out as well. So there are economic factors to take into consideration as well. And if you play your cards right on that, you know, you'll be at, well, 9 times out of 10, you'll be absolutely fine. That's the other thing I think that I just thought would be worth mentioning as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. We actually created a, we call it the cash flow roadmap, a little software tool that some of our students use, and they just play around with that. They just go like, well, if I buy one property a year for 5 years and then reinvest profits, how does my portfolio grow? And it's just so cool to see how that compounding effect works in your advantage, right? Again, the problem is when you let it, when you let the tip, the scales tip the wrong way. And that's what I did, and that's what got me in trouble. So keeping the scales right, then you'll be in very, very good shape.
Couldn't agree more. And I suppose 40 minutes in, I think it's been, cracking content so far. But in terms of, I mean, wrap up in a couple of minutes, any other key information or any golden nuggets of information that you think would be valuable sharing?
Well, I think what it really comes down to, property, it's just three parts in my mind. There are just three simple parts to property. We call it the KAP formula, and this is really kind of our success formula for everything. The first thing you need to do is get the knowledge, right? So just listening to podcasts like this one here, it's you're learning so much, right? And I'm sure, listening to Robert week after week, speaking to amazing people, you're going to keep learning so much. That's a brilliant first step. As I alluded to, my first mentor didn't really do so well, but I still believe in the concept of mentorship. I've had other brilliant mentors who are a reason why we turn things around. So get yourself a mentor who can guide you down the path and help you succeed, right? So that's the first thing, knowledge. Learn what you're doing. The second part is the A is the action, right? If you don't do anything with that knowledge, you're not going to get anything. But then it's the third part, and that's what we've talked a lot about today, is the people. That's the P. So people are going to pay for all your deals. They're going to bring the money. So work with them, treat them right. They're your clients. And then just as importantly, take a look at the team. Build a quality team and do your due diligence. Go in deep. Make sure they really can do what they say they can do. If you get that combination right, if you understand property, if you have the right team and you have the ability to raise finance from investors, well, put that together and you're going to build a portfolio quicker than you can ever imagine. So that's really what it comes down to in my mind.
KAP, knowledge, action, and people. So, but I think that's a great place to end, to be fair, Dan. I think that is absolutely action-packed, full of, great content there. A lot that people can learn from, a lot that people can take away as well, and certainly action in their own businesses. But before we sign off, if people wanted to get hold of you or find out more about Momentum Property Education, how do they do that?
Well, so one place to go might be to go over to our podcast, the Momentum Investing Podcast. You could listen to when I interviewed Kim Kiyosaki on that show. So it's if you're listening through Apple Podcasts or similar, you just got to scroll down a bit when you search for Momentum Investing. If you go to our YouTube channel, which is just Momentum Property Education, it's actually the welcome video when you come to our channel page. I happen to choose our biggest celebrity as our welcome video. But there you can listen to that episode and you can hear kind of Kim share about the personal development she's working on right now, how she manages her portfolio, and how their property journey started, which was really, really cool. So that's one place. We're on Facebook. We have a great Facebook community called the International Property Investors, where I'm actually going to be interviewing Robert. We're going to be doing a live Q&A together. And answering questions. So that's going to be really, really cool. So if you go, the easiest is probably to go to the Momentum Property Education Facebook page and then check linked groups, and you'll be able to find the International Property Investors. We've got, I think we've just hit the 1500 investor mark now from people from all over the world investing all over the world. So it's a great network to be a part of. But we're essentially on any social media at Momentum Property Education. And if you're just starting out, I mean, we've kind of talked kind of high level here now. But if you're just starting out, we do have an introduction to property investing that you can go to. It's completely free. It's at momentumgift.com, and it'll show you the three simple steps to property investing and the three most common mistakes that new investors make and how to avoid them. And I made all three, and I'll tell you that story as well. So that's just momentumgift.com. So yeah, I'd love to connect with everyone. And Robert, again, thank you so much for having me here on the show.
Daniel, you're more than welcome. It's always great to share stories and hear stories. And as usual, we'll put all of those links into the show notes as well. all of that being said, happy Easter, and catch you on Facebook Live in due course.
Yeah, I'll speak to you soon. Thank you so much.